Welcome to the Estate Professionals Mastermind Podcast, a podcast for estate professionals who earn more, work less, and make a huge difference in their communities. If you get value out of this free content, be sure to check out probatemastery.com, where you can get live classes, access to weekly coaching, and valuable courses. To learn more, visit probatemastery.com. Now let's jump into this week's content.
Welcome to our Probate Mastery Real Estate Coaching Call. I'm Bill Gross. I'm your colleague that leads this coaching call every week. This is part of the program for Probate Mastery, probatemastery.com for all the details. You can start with the basics for free. Always recommend start with the free stuff. And then if you want to get certified, click on here and it'll give you the details. And then there's additional course bundles. Continue the conversation at the Facebook community called Estate Professionals Mastermind, and you'll see some different content that's available. Post your own stuff there, as well as specials. They'll run from time to time and post them here into the Facebook group. Separately, I'm Bill Gross. I run probateweekly.com. We do that on Thursdays at 4 p.m. Pacific time. That's an interview-based program. Who's coming on this week? A vendor from the East Coast. But come on and put your information in. You'll get reminders, or you can scroll down and get the audio version or the past episodes of my program. And I also separately have my own Facebook group, Probate Weekly, and you can post your probate-related content there. Okay, is Lou on the call? I don't know if you want to jump in and offer any specials or any news or updates. I don't see him here. So Lou is the kind of program manager for Probate Mastery. And sometimes he jumps in here and has something he wants to promote. But we'll just jump in. So what's on your mind? Let's share victories. Let's share losses. Problems you're working on, let's work on them together. The goal here is to help us, those of us who are actually working this business on a daily basis, get better by learning from each other, pushing each other, holding each other accountable to improve. So anybody have anything they want to share? Questions, comments, problems? I can go on. I can talk the whole hour, but you want me to? I'm going to threaten you with doing that. So you can raise your hand. Hey, Dan, what's going on?
How you doing?
Good.
Are you in California?
I'm in Los Angeles.
Oh, you are, yeah. Hey, quick question for you. So on these probate letters, you know, when I'm doing some mailings to probates, there's a million different letters that people use. There's a million different things that people say they want to keep in there and things that they don't want to keep in there. Do you have a recommendation for what to put on those probate letters?
I'm sorry, one more time?
So for probates, you know, if I'm doing probate mailings to a probate list, mm-hmm. is there specific things that you do put on there and specific things you don't put on there? Like, you know, some people say, hey, look, just basically write a really simple kind of handwritten letter with a few things on it. And other people say, you know, go into more detail and explain yourself more. And is there like a sweet spot that you think is better for getting people to respond?
So I'm in my in basket here on purpose. I'm not ignoring you. I'm trying to get ready to answer your question. So I am a petitioner on two probates, one in San Diego and one in Riverside County. And I have mailers, and I'm keeping them all. But I do an analysis. Some I can't read. I got a postcard here. Hold on one second. Let me get this thing. Here's one where they said use the handwriting font. I can't even read it. I mean, I guess you could read it, but I can't read it. So I think I have a rule on these calls, and I have a rule as a coach, which is two things. I'm never going to say anything because I'm getting paid to say it. I'm going to tell the truth. My own criteria when people ask me to speak is, as long as I can tell the truth, I'm fine. I will not be edited. I'm too old. I'm a grown man. I pay my taxes. And if you want to hear what I have to say, ask me. If you don't ask me to speak. That's my rule. Number two, I'm really careful to only talk about things that I know that work because I've done them. So now, I also know that every market's different. I happen to be in one of the most competitive markets in the country, Los Angeles. San Diego is very competitive. San Jose is very competitive. metro areas tend to be way more competitive. Suburban areas less so. Rural areas even less so. I interviewed a coach, Sharon. I'm blanking on her name. She's from Kentucky. Vornholt from Kentucky, and obviously more rural than where I live. So the rules are different, but you know, everybody's experience is based on their experience. But I'll tell you that on my listings, where I'm the petitioner, I get about 20 pieces of mail each so far. I get horrific texts in that they're long. Somebody gave them a template to use. And the database pulls up my phone number, my personal cell phone, and my wife's personal cell phone. So my wife's getting texts saying, sorry for your recent loss. And you know, she's a little more emotional than I am. She doesn't really know what I'm doing, doesn't really understand what we're doing. So she gets, who died? So if the loss of your, you know, mother, did somebody die? So I think that you know, whatever you do in marketing, you should start, check the results, fix it, make it better, do it again, do it better, do it again, do it better, do it again. Anybody tells you this is the system, I think they're probably misleading you. They're selling you something that really doesn't work. And so to answer your question, I think that if I was going to do mailing, when I started in probate, my main lead generation was going to court every day. When COVID stopped that, I changed my main lead generation to social media and videos, which shouldn't be a surprise if you know me at all. Both of them, I worked it every day. Both of them, I iterated every single day. Both of them, if you say to me, well, how does that work? The answer is not a 5-minute list. It's like the result of years of doing it and improving it all the time. So when you ask me about, and I know this is a long answer, probably a little long, more than you wanted, but I would just say to you that if I was going to do mailing as my main marketing for probate, I would do split tests every month. I would check the results of each one. I would track them all. I would track different colors, sizes, postcard versus letter. I've had people mail me pens. To me, that's just kind of annoying, but everybody's different. It doesn't matter how I am. It matters how enough people respond to joint business for you. And so what I would say to you is I wouldn't take anybody's word for how the best letter is that works. I might start with one, but I wouldn't really start with two. Start with two and see which one performs better, and then keep the better one and try something different the next time. And I would iterate every single month. And if you can every month improve your response rate by 0.1%, then over the course of a year, you're going to improve your response rate by a full percentage point. That's huge, right? So I don't know the answers, Dan, because I did some mailing and I just didn't have the energy to follow through on it. My sense of it is it takes more repetition. People say that. And when I hear that, I say, well, when I hear people talk about response rates, they say it was from like 1% to 5% response ratio. That's a big variance. That's the difference between going broke and making a fortune. So the number should be somewhere like 2.2% or, you know, whatever you experience with it. So to answer your question, I know that alltheleads.com has a robust offering of marketing materials and templates and things like that. I think that, and I like them a lot, and I'm a client of theirs. I've used their flyers and their websites and their training, but I think they make it sound too simple, and I don't think they really get you committed to signing up to building a business, which requires constant iteration, constant attention, constant changes.
Yeah. I mean, for mailings, everybody says you have to mail, you know, 5, 6, 7 pieces to the same people. I don't know that that's true.
I don't know that's true. I don't know.
Yeah.
I know that, for example, one of the best, you know, not to pitch politics, I'm not saying one side there, Democrat, Republican, Biden, Trump, but politics is one of the best ways to learn about marketing. It's such a pure marketing game. And I know that the people who send me political material, they don't send me five or six, they send me one, maybe two, right? They know what they're doing. So I think sometimes saying five or six is a way to get you to buy five or six times and then say, oh, well, maybe you didn't make your, and then you didn't make your phone calls. Well, that means the phone call is important, not the mail. And when you track the numbers on those systems, what I find is, of course, if you make phone calls, you're going to get more response rate than mailers. Of course. And of course, if you phone call the mailers, you're going to get a better response than if you don't call them. So, but to me, that's not the right answer. So when somebody says to me, it takes five or six, well, so then what's your response ratio? Is it 1% of six mailings or is it 1% each of six mailings? And that's a big difference. So I just don't, when people throw those numbers out, sometimes I would love to question them, but I know the answer is they're not really being scientific.
Okay. Thank you.
I don't know. I mean to be up on it. I feel strong. No, I hate to see agents waste their money.
Well, do you think mailing in this day and age is not a good way to go about things? I mean,
no, the opposite. I think there's wide open opportunities with direct mail, like never before. I think there's so much attention on other things. I think mail has been, but that said, it only makes sense. It's only a business if you can track the numbers and the results. So if you can track how many people call you off of that, then or email you or text you, then you can track it and see what the impact is and determine if it's a viable business or not. But to say, well, it's five or six mailers, maybe you get no response after five, but somehow on the sixth one you're going to, that doesn't make any sense to me. And I just don't think it's scientifically based.
No, I agree. I think, you know, a couple of mailings, but you have to call the people. You have to call. I mean, I've lost a few deals because nobody called the person. You know, so we got 25 letters. Nobody called us. Not one person called us. And I've lost deals to a friend of ours that way before.
And remind me, where do you do business?
Boston, North Shore.
So, I mean, I got phone calls. No, I got phone calls from telemarketers, not from the agents, which is I found that interesting. Not one agent called me, but I had other telemarketers call me or assistants call me who didn't. And so I would ask them questions. They know what they're talking about. And I think that's a hard – every real estate agent's fantasy. If this is true for you, put yes. Every real estate agent's fantasy is that they can – find the magic data and the magic script, hire a telemarketer who will just set appointments and then just go out and list property. I had that fantasy. I had like a lot of my fantasies in my life crushed, but anybody else besides me had that fantasy? I think every realtor does, right? So if you're going to make the phone calls, then the next question, Danny, is, okay, you're going to make phone calls. Is the mailing adding to substantially your conversion ratio or not? Because they might, and this is something else I've experienced, where when I used to be a phone caller, people would say they got my mailers, but I never did mailers. Not before probate, when I did expired listings. I sounded so good, they assumed I was the person who had the best marketing material that they got. So again, business is about tracking your numbers and being able to document the results. And just to say, and the other thing, the reason why I'm here is I'm in this business every day. I mean, I literally, you know, got a, you know, property now to be listed, got approved in court this morning. So I'm not telling you something that I did 10 years ago and I don't know if it works anymore or never did. I'm only going to tell you what I know is working. And I think when people tell you to mail, I'd sure like to know from them, okay, well, how much do you mail monthly? What's your response rate? How do you measure it, right? Do you vary it? How often do you vary it? I'd want to know those things before I would invest $600 a month times 6 months, $3,600. I'd like to know what I'm getting for $3,600. Right. And I'm not against mail. Don't get me wrong. I'm just against frivolously spending money. I am really against. And this just comes from my experience as a real estate agent in my years is I talk to somebody, I'm doing great. And the next thing you know, they're out of the business or driving DoorDash or Uber because they can't pay the bills. And they spent their last money on some coaching program or some marketing program, and they went out of business. Rather than holding on to that money and maybe doing the things that would generate business, door knocking, I think phone calling, that kind of stuff. Okay?
Thank you.
Okay, my pleasure. I'll get my soapbox. Sorry, guys. I don't mean to scare you for asking questions. I just hate to see people waste money, and I hate to see people talked into wasting money. Okay, other questions, comments? Anybody else? Anybody doing any mailing with success? You want to share your numbers or share your experience? Glad to hear it. I would say I'm glad to hear. If I'm wrong, I'd love to hear it. Nothing I'd rather do more than learn I'm mistaken so I can learn from it. And I will say I do mail to my center of influence attorneys. So attorneys I've met, talked to. I'm not so black and white in how I define it, but at least I've met them. I've talked to them. I have about 200 in my database I mail postcards to. I was doing monthly, and I just cut that down to once every 3 months just to save some money. I don't get a return for that other than I keep in touch with those people. Anybody else? Questions, comments? Has anybody had a customer ask you about the commission lawsuit? Not in regards to some general conversation, but in regards to a contract you're getting ready to write with them? Any sellers say to you,
Yeah? Many conversations.
And so of ones that you got listed afterwards or you didn't list as a result?
It's just general clients or potential clients, what this is going to do. And also just maybe not even clients. They just heard about it. So what's that going to do to the industry?
So, no, a lot of that. I see a lot of that. My question is a little more specific than that. Have you had customers who balked at signing a listing contract? Like in California, we have the actual commissions on it, buyer and listing side. It may have any customers at that stage say, well, I don't want to pay that now because of the lawsuit. I don't have to pay anything to the buyer side or any of that kind of thing.
California, well, as you know, here in California, we were very explicit in the listing contract, who pays for what.
Right. Yeah. I do know. I've had a number of customers ask me what's going to happen. And I had one yesterday concerned that he thought the real estate market was going to crash come July because of these changes. I've seen agents who were brand new who quit because they were afraid the business was to get too hard for them. So I've seen some of that, which I would kind of call panic, which is, you know, but I haven't seen any real leverage changing from agent to customer. I'm just curious if anybody has any of those experiences. Okay, what else? What's going on? Here we are in April, a fourth of the year is gone already. How about that? One quarter of the year gone. And you know, come November, December, things slow down. So we're really in the fat middle of the market right now. Anybody? No? Okay. Let's see, Jim, hey, I see your hand up.
Hey, what's going on? Oh, sorry.
Hey, Jim. Hi, Bill. Jim Stewart from Virginia Beach. I'm an investor. And back to your previous question, that was always a question I had, even when I got my license. Why is the seller paying a commission to the buyer agent when they're not representing me? Right. And so, you know, now that this lawsuit's happened, I'm very much inclined, you know, not to, you know, put 6% out there on every deal, you know, and take care of both sides of the transaction. And especially in this market, which is a seller's market, still, at least in my area. You know, it really goes back to a question of fairness. You know, what is fair? You know, should me as a investor, as a seller doing volume, you know, why am I giving 3% of every transaction to a buyer agent who isn't representing me? And, you know, it's my agent's job to sell my property, not for me to necessarily, reward a buyer's agent. You know, that's up to them.
I've rarely double ended deals, in particular probate. You know, attorneys, I think, really frown on that. Personally, I find it very hard. Once I've signed a contract with a seller saying I'm going to get you top dollar, how do I represent a buyer and get them what they want is the best price? And so I've made a few exceptions when the property was very small, like a $10,000 piece of land, and other agents wouldn't be bothered with it. Or very sophisticated investors who would say to me, you can represent me if we get somebody else, we're just going to pay them. And they're buying it maybe sight unseen as a development project or something where they don't really need the representation. They're making an offer. They know the price. They know the numbers. And so a few times, and even there, I feel uncomfortable, to be quite honest, because I want the seller to know they're getting my complete attention. So I do find it difficult and challenging. I think one of the things that is unspoken so far, I've really watched the news a lot on the subject. I think nobody has really mentioned, if you think about the property, it has built into it that commission structure. So imagine, let's say a $400,000 property, and if the commission is 6%, so that's $24,000 kind of built into the $400,000 price of the seller. And if we said, well, we're still going to list at 3%, but we're going to pull the 3% back and the buyer's going to pay it. 3% on $400,000 is $12,000. Well, all the comps of the past sales include the buyer's commission. Now the buyer's going to pay $400,000 plus $12,000, or are they going to pay $400,000 minus the $12,000 and then pay the $12,000 to their agent? And so these are things that you have to look at the numbers and make sure that the buyers could actually come out way worse off if that doesn't become a standard practice, just like we have in appraisers on concessions. They always ask whether, you know, seller concessions, particularly on FHA loans, closing costs paid and such, to try to adjust the comps. To me, that's going to be a big issue as far as that goes. But I think that this disruption in the market, I don't really necessarily fear it or worried about, but I will say that it's just another reason why to focus on being a listing agent, not a buyer's agent.
Right. The other question is,
who actually pays the commission at the very end? Is it the buyer that actually is paying the commission because he's paying for the property, or the seller actually paying? So many, many, many years ago, and I think Bill's been in the business long too, is that it used to be that, yeah, it was that way where the buyer paid their agent a small commission. Then it became a marketing ploy to go ahead and have the seller include the buyer's commission many years ago, back in the 60s and 70s. And it became kind of a marketing, then it became a norm, and then it became a standard. And that's where we're at right now. Right. So my feeling at this time is that I feel sorry for the first-time homebuyers. If the seller's expecting to not pay, or concessions that they're calling it now, to the buyer's agent, because a first-time homebuyer, they're having a hard time coming up with a down payment, let alone a buyer's agent commission. So it's all up in the air right now. I tell people it's all up in the air. And VA, according to what I've heard, is that they're not allowed to pay for broker's commission.
So far, yeah.
Yeah. Now, that may change because of the law, but at this point, they're saying no.
One of the other things I think that goes unstated is that it's probably true that the buyer's commission on an hourly basis on a transaction they get is too high, right? So buyers will look at that and say, oh, gee, my agent, he only did this amount of work, or she, and they're going to get $10,000, and that's too much. But that buyer's agent isn't guaranteed to get paid anything. You know, buyers aren't typically paying us per hour to show them property and tour property and write 9 offers that don't get accepted. And so to some degree, there has to be an understanding that, you know, if you don't want to pay for something in advance, and only pay upon completion, then you're going to end up having to pay a higher commission rate. And I think it's like anything else. If somebody said to me, be my buyer's agent, Bob, I'll guarantee you your hourly rate, you know, I would, I don't know if I would do it, but I probably would do it, or I'd be open to it for sure. And so I think that's where you see these, you see the press, and I think they jump on agents are overpaid. If there's one group in our industry who's starving, it's buyer's agents. They're not overpaid. They might be overpaid on a transaction that closes. They're not paid on anything on the other 20 properties they showed, and the buyers waste their time frivolously. And I get that. As a listing agent, I get phone calls on listings, and they'll ask me questions that require a license to answer. What's the price? What are the terms? What's the status? And I'll say, we need an agent to help you with that, and I can't represent you on this one. I can refer you to an agent. Well, come on, you just tell me. No, I can't just tell you. I have a license, and I don't want to lose it over you. And I think that consumers don't necessarily have an understanding of what is involved, you know, being licensed, what we can and can't do, and the time involved. Why would I want to spend 20 minutes with somebody I'm never going to get paid on their business? Because if they're not working with an agent, they're probably not going to ever see the property. They're never really going to offer and buy that property. It doesn't ever work out that way. You know, my job is to market the property, but it doesn't mean I should waste my time. So anyhow, it's going to be a challenge. I think that we all have to be, flexible and have some resiliency to get through this time period. But again, it just to me screams why you need to have listings and focus on the listing side. Okay, thanks, Jim. Did we answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. And the only other thing, you know, I'd like to just throw out there is that, you know, me as a professional investor, I value the skill and what my agent brings to the table. And I don't mind paying them, you know, because it's not the five deals that go smoothly,
right,
that, you know, it's the ones that start going south,
right,
or there's legal issues involved, or title issues or whatever. And to have someone who is a pro in your corner in those scenarios, that's really what I see the great value in having a professional agent, you know, because I can't wear all the hats and do that myself as the business owner. In the beginning, that was my mindset. It's like, I want to keep as much revenue as possible in my corner. But I think if I was an agent today representing investors, especially since that's kind of the form we're in here, it's like I would really put that value proposition at the forefront, and in the value of that relationship, and you know, all the little things that my agent does for me that I'm not paying them an hourly rate for, really adds up. It does.
I mean, I think that's the goal of an agent, is to be so valuable people have to work with you. Right. They really want to work with you. And I know I work on that with attorneys, where I, you know, I'm reviewing cases and looking at the probate notes and looking at the documents, and I'm following up with their paralegal, and I'm following up with the unlawful detainer attorney in a way they're not. I'm communicating with the customer, getting documents signed for them, so that the attorney's like, you know, it's just hard to do a deal without you, Bill, because you do all this stuff. And I don't necessarily do it all personally. I have a system and people, but the goal, I think, of any business is to create so much value for your prospects that they have to work with you. I'm always, my favorite movies of all time is My Cousin Vinny. And I'm reminded of the scene where the cousin, his attorney stammers. Now, I don't like the fact he's making fun of the guy stuttering. I'm very sensitive to that. My best friend in high school was both a stutterer and a nationally competitive debater, because the stuttering went away. So I'm very sensitive to that part of the movie, and I find that offensive, but he also was a bad attorney, and the cousin said, you're fired. And they turned to the other attorney and said, I want you to be my attorney. And I want customers who feel that way about me. They're old agents fired, and they want me to represent them, and particularly investors, I think. And I've had investors who I work with, and then they go to some other agent and come back to me and say, well, the other guy doesn't do this, this, or that. Right, that's what I do. And that's how we want to be. So for all of us, here's an investor, he's telling you point blank, you know, it's the value proposition of being valuable to your customer that's going to get your business. And I work with investors, and I'll do things like when we buy the property, I'll tell them, well, I'll sell it and cut my commission by 1% because I've already got the property. I've already done a lot of the work. It's easier to work with you the second time around. So I'll pass on some of the savings to you to reflect the fact that you're a professional. I do get investors who ask me to save money on the purchase side. I never do that because, and they'll always say they'll list it with me again, and often they don't. And so I said, just avoid that. It's not worth it for me. And I appreciate if you want to work with somebody else. I really don't care, to be honest, but I know I'm going to help you get, I'm going to increase your ratio of getting that property. That's what you're hiring for. And if you don't need me, then don't use me. So.
And something else that I've chosen to do is if another agent brings me a deal, I always give them the listing. And I tell my primary guy that, you know, if someone brings me a deal, I'm going to reward them with a listing on the outside.
On the flip side of that, I've had an investor say it to me and not list with me on the outside. And then they call me back and say, well, how come you don't send me your properties anymore? So, well, because you didn't, we priced this deal that you're going to let me list it and you didn't. Well, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'd say, well, that's how I get paid. So,
yeah.
Hey, I've had my dentist. I literally told my dentist, for years, he called me and asked me questions and they listed with somebody else. And when I come back, the secretary called me for a call back in dentistry and I said, well, I'm no longer using him because he didn't use me for real estate. And he called me and said, is that right? I said, yeah, how do you think I pay for your dentistry? I pay yes. You by selling houses. If you use somebody else, let him be your dental patient, right? So, okay, there you go. That's probably a little too much information for you guys. Jim, thanks so much. Okay, so let's see. Ray says about exposure and traffic, the buyer's agents are the backbone of the market. I don't know. I agree with that. I think cooperation is the key. What we offer uniquely as realtors that Zillow doesn't do and Redfin doesn't do is we both work with buyers and sellers and cooperate to service the customer. Zillow's just in it for their fee. They would literally cut the throat of every realtor they could if they made an extra dollar revenue. As Redfin, the owner there who's worth millions, started off to disrupt real estate agents. Now he's hiring real estate agents. So I don't think they can really decide that. But we as realtors, the core of what we do is cooperate. What's really in our tack, and I'm going to do a video on the plaintiffs in this commission lawsuit, because it's just despicable, the whole thing. The core of what we do is work together and service our customers as a result. And that's capitalism. And what's really under attack, I think, here is capitalism and our way of doing business in America. Lou is on the call, Lou Gutierrez. And so if you have questions in the chat box, he describes the program. And you also can book a call with him if you want more information about anything with the Probate Mastery. So I'd love to have you do that. And then Vince says, look, more of a consulting business concept rather than traditional brokerage. I would agree with that. And then Richard says he sees the same 5 to 10 listing agents who are listing the properties at 0% for the buyer's agent. It's almost that the listing agent makes a decision for the seller. Has anybody else seen that? You know, I think that if I was to promote that concept to my customers, most of them would agree with me. They're hiring me. Richard, I don't know that necessarily it's that they're forcing the decision. It's that, you know, we're salespeople and our job is to service a customer. And if you believe that offering zero the buyer side and saves money for the seller, then you would do that. And I don't know that I would assume it's nefarious. I do think that there are agents who do it dishonestly, assuming buyer's agents will offer the property and not check and discover there's no commission while they're in escrow. Now, one of my best practices is I always download the MLS full detail report and attach it to my offer, and I circle the commission because by MLS rules, you can't change the commission if you've submitted an offer and have that. So, and that forces me to check the commission, and I'll discover sometimes it's below or not. But I wouldn't assume they're doing it dishonestly. There are agents who are scared and don't offer good value for the customers, and their only response is to cut the price. And like most discount services, you get what you pay for or don't get what you don't pay for. Ann Bollinger says she has a question. Ann, if you want to raise your hand, or there you are. Let's find you here and add you in. What's going on, Ann?
Hi. Hi, Bill. Thanks for everything. I am a licensed agent in Nevada, but the question I have relates to Missouri. I have a friend whose parents have recently deceased. She has what she calls is a friend who is a licensed agent that says that the agent can manage the entire probate process for her, taking it to court. Is that right? An agent can do that? Or does my friend have to be there also?
Well, first off, I don't know Missouri law. So I think you know the right answer is somebody who is licensed to practice law in Missouri. But just to use the semantics of what you said, I might say to a customer, I'll manage the whole thing. And what I really mean is I have a legal service that I'm going to delegate the attorney work to. And I have in some cases, I have a service that I will delegate that will act as the fiduciary for the customer. And in some case, and I have another company that will advance all the fees for all that and all the other expenses. So when you say the word manage, it could mean that they do it themselves, or it could mean they have a team of people they work with that do the various pieces of it and maybe act as their attorney and or act as their fiduciary as part of that process. I do that. And that sounds like language I might say, and it's not precise, but at some point you have to explain what all that means.
But will my friend need to go to court, you know, to talk with the judge or magistrate?
Again, I don't know state law in Missouri, and I don't know the local rules of that particular county, which also these things vary by county. However, typically you don't need to if your paperwork is submitted properly. Most courts review the filings ahead of time and will pre-approve a petition if it's correct, or somehow identify if there's defects in the petition that you need to correct. And so in most jurisdictions, in my experience, you can correct those deficiencies before your hearing date, and then the judge will just simply approve it as prayed, approved as your petition asked for. And so depending on what she's asking for, they might be able to do that without going to court. Today, I happen to be a petitioner on a court case for a client, and the attorney was on, in this case, it was video, because they allow in LA County video. And I went on video just to be there in case something came up. I didn't have to be. So the client didn't have to be online, but to me, it's a good practice. I also, the other attorneys see me, I put on a suit and tie and sit, it's in my office. I just keep that here, but it's a way to also have the other attorneys see me. So to answer your question, in many cases nowadays, customers, and especially since COVID, there's ways the courts have worked that customers don't have to go to court if everything's done ahead of time properly.
Thank you.
Sure. Thanks, Ann. Okay. And I think I caught that. Okay. I think I'm up to date. Let's just do some housekeeping real quick, just so we know where we're at. That's weird. Where am I at here? What happened to the Probate Mastery? That's weird. Oh, I must hit. You know what? I know exactly what I did. That's funny. Okay. So this is Probate Mastery's real estate coaching call. And we do this every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific time, 2 p.m. Eastern time, and everything in between or either side. It's part of the Probate Mastery program. You can go to probatemastery.com, select the free courses, and get certified, as well as take additional course bundles. All those details are here. We also have a Facebook community to continue the conversation. Post your questions if you miss it. Look for promotions. Look for reminders and such. And then I separately have my own program, Probate Weekly, which is primarily an interview-based program every Thursday at 4 p.m. live, and we live stream it on social media. If you put your email address down, I'll send you links and information to that. And we also have it on audio formats. And the past episodes are available on YouTube as well. So hope you find all those interesting and helpful. And I'm Bill Gross. I'm at Bill Gross Probate on social media. I'm a practitioner. I sell houses in Los Angeles, California, as well as I'm building a national team of realtors who are probate focused across the country. We just added one in New York to go with Florida, Georgia, Minnesota. Yeah. That's in New York, right? Yeah. Anyhow, questions, comments, problems,
but what is your, hi, Chuck Smith here in Portland area. What is it that you're doing building Ashley?
So I think that one of the opportunities that's unique in probate is a national business, not just, if you think of real estate, there's companies that are national, obviously Keller Williams or Century 21, but as an individual, it's possible that we would get an estate with a property in LA and another one in Florida. It's unusual part of probate. And very often our attorneys in LA are looking for referrals to attorneys in other states. And so my goal is to build a nationwide team of realtors with me at eXp that are in other states so we can kind of work together on referrals. I do, where I have holes in that group, I refer out, and I've done a bunch of referrals. Last year, I think I closed three. This year, I very close two. So, but I'm looking for agents in individual states to help coordinate our marketing together and work together on my video marketing program. So anybody who's interested in considering joining my team and working together more closely, I'll be open to talking about that. But that's joining eXp Realty as your platform for your business. And then separately, I just like to collaborate with agents and always have looking for people to add into my Rolodex. Okay. Answer your question, Chuck. We good? Yep, thanks. Okay. Where else? We're in Florida. So you guys might have met the probate nurse on this call, Melanie Hands. So she's in the Tampa area. And I've been in discussion with somebody in Miami. I'd love to get somebody in Miami. I go to South Florida every year a couple of times. So love to talk about that if anybody's interested. And Ryan, I see you're in Detroit. Let's talk sometime whenever you're interested. Okay. And Chuck Smith, I see you have a call there too as well. So I'll reach out to you. Okay. Any other question? And again, I didn't mean to make an advertisement about what I'm doing. I just, you know, part of why I want to share it with you is one, just to be, you know, honest, to challenge you to think big too, because probate is a huge niche. It's really, I think of it as a super niche. And there's a lot of different ways to work it within probate. Investor, you know, Jim's an investor. Melanie's the probate nurse. She works primarily with nurses that do placements for families into senior living. I work mostly with attorneys and legal services. I like to work that angle myself and financing and advances. I used to work strictly court sales. I still do some of that. That's great, a great niche. So there's different niches you can work. And I think that there's a bunch of ways to skin that cat. Senior citizen housing, estate planning is another one. I actually have a video on 11 ways to get listings in probate. And I really work one or two of them. So part of my goal here is also get you to think a little bigger. Hey, George in Miami. Very nice. I love Miami. My family and I go to Surfside every year for vacation. I used to live in Boca. Okay, other questions, comments, challenges. Who's got a victory you guys want to share? Dwayne's got his hand up. Let's get Dwayne in here, and then I'm not sure who's next there, but what's up,
Hi,
Dwayne?
Bill.
How you doing?
Yeah. I've seen a couple of your emails go past that have to do with building your business using email, and you have a small fee that goes with it. Could you expand a little bit about what that's about?
Sure. You know, it's funny you ask because, you know, there's an ancient Jewish piece of wisdom, which is more than the calf wants the milk, the mother wants to milk her calf. And I think a great coach wants students to succeed more than the students do because the coach's ability is stronger. I found myself when I talk to agents who join my team, we always start off with what I call the foundation. And when I talk to agents, and now for anybody here, whoever wants to, you know, have a call one-on-one for 15 minutes or so, I'm glad to give a coaching call for free. Even though we charge on the website, I'm glad to get people, come my perspective on your business, try to help. But I always start with what I call the foundation, because to build a house, you have to have a good foundation. And that foundation is all the people that you know, like, and trust, and know, like, and trust you, and how you communicate with them. And in some regards, leadership is about communicating, And the more people you communicate to and the more effectively you communicate, the more powerful you're going to be, more successful you're going to be. It's just math at that point. And so many realtors are in the business and don't accumulate the names and numbers and emails of people they meet. They door knock and lose the names. They go to network events, they lose the names. They change companies, lose the database. And so what I've tried to do is create a email program, a mastermind program to cover what I think are the four basics of your business to build that foundation. And it's not to say, and then you're fixed forever, but to say, these are activities you should do forever, which is number one, make sure you're accumulating all your data into one place, your CRM, your database program, your mailing program. Number two, you should be always focused on increasing the frequency of your comments, frequency of your emails, frequency of your social posts. Three, the engagement of your marketing. You always want to make sure people are opening your emails, reading your social posts, watching your videos, and tracking that. And then fourth is adding new platforms so that the same content you do, that you email, you can post in two or three places and then leverage your time more effectively. So for example, one of my goals, my video program, is I looked at 10 times my effort. So if I do a 10-minute interview, I know it costs me 15 minutes of time to get on that interview. I want to get 150 minutes of watch time, then I know I've broken even. Now, some videos do better, some don't do as well. And so I'm always trying to increase that number as best I can. But so the email program is really about going through. I do a 1 hour overview of those four areas, doubling your contacts, doubling your frequency, doubling your engagement, and doubling your channels. And then four half-hour follow-up sessions in small group on one of each of those and implementing the homework to actually get the work done. So I look at this more as a workshop where you do the work rather than as a class or entertainment. I really am not interested in entertaining. I really want to help people be successful. So I do that class once a month. I next offer it on May 8th. I just launched the last one last week. I'll put a link into the chat box with the details if anybody is interested. And then if you're in the LA area, I'm doing it live on Friday in Diamond Bar, which is unusual to do it that way, but we're going to do it live one time as part of another program I'm doing. So, but again, I think for even if you'll take the program, just think of the concepts that you really have to get everybody into one. You got to communicate with everybody. If you ever listen to me talk about probate, I always tell people the place to start is probate content to your current database. It's free. And yeah, I get you could buy some fancy mailers and you could buy some data and cold call for 3 hours a day. But if you're a realtor and you have 300-400 people in your database and you find some good piece of information about how to avoid probate through estate planning or the horrors of probate, some story that you find interesting, and share that with people you know, you're going to start positioning yourself as an expert in their mind. And that's how you're going to get your business most cost effectively. So hope that helps.
It does.
Okay. Feel free to join in. It's $97. It's 1 hour plus four 30-minute follow-up sessions in a small group. Money back guarantee if you're happy with it. And I just did the 1 hour program last week. So if you wanted to join in on that one, let me text me and I'll, if you sign up now, I'll send you the last email and you can start right away. It's not the money. I just needed a way to cover the cost of doing this, you know, on a bigger scale. And so it's a kind of nominal program for that kind of activity. Okay.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you. And next hand up I saw was Twana. Let's see here. Get you in here. What is Hello. Up, Twana? Hey, how you doing?
Hey, so quick question. I'm good. You were mentioning some of the niches to probate and you mm-hmm. said working for cases. Can you elaborate on that?
I'm sorry, I said what?
You stated working court cases. That's one of them.
Yeah. So and I forget where you're at, Twana. Where are you so real? Atlanta, right?
Texas. Texas.
And what city?
Fort Worth.
I'll admit, I mean, I know Fort Worth pretty well. I don't know the court system or the demographics as well as Dallas. LA is the largest largest probate market in the country, second largest city, largest probate. Probate skews, for whatever reason, or LA is the poorest county in America, so we have more probates. We also have them all 90% in one courthouse. So in our court system, we have most probates don't need court confirmation, but about 5 or 10% do. 5 or 10% of a lot is still a big enough number. And so we average in LA probably monthly 30 or 40 court confirmation sales every month. And so I track them all. And I show those properties to investors, and I'll have investors who want to bid on those properties, and I'll help them go and bid on those. And I'll use my expertise of understanding the court case and who the parties are and what the problems are with the case to help them decide whether they want to go after that property or not.
Okay.
It's a little unique to LA. I don't know Fort Worth. My guess is you have a lot less, but I also would guess that if you only have a couple of months, those couple of months are probably pretty good opportunities that might be worth at least checking into. It may not be enough to make a living. I used to do, in 2020, I think I did 18 sales in court. And then of those 18, almost all of them got flipped. So you could see the business that generated for me.
Nice.
Right. But they're smaller. You don't win them all. But let's say that you didn't do 18 a year, but let's say you did two or three. But those two or three could be good properties for investors, and two or three cases with attorneys that you're going to meet, and you're in front of the judge on those cases. So it really, for me, helped launch my overall business more than just those sales. It helped make me a much more effective real estate agent for my clients.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Always nice to see you. Okay, we're coming up on the end of the hour here, but we've got time for questions, comments, last-minute victories you want to share, losses, problems. I have a listing. I've never had this happen before that expired today. I'm just glad to have it expired. Just this lady from the beginning, I advised her on getting an attorney, a particular process. It's like she just would not follow my instructions, and it's been about a year and a half. And she's no closer to getting authority than we met her a year and a half ago. And I had listed the property, and I tried to talk her out into counseling it. I couldn't get her to. And it expired. And I am so thrilled. I'd never been that happy to have a listing expire. Jim Stewart, what's up? I'm sorry. You're muted. You had your hand up.
Oh, real quick question about the probate leads. Mm-hmm. We have the option of getting the probate plus with all the property information, all the what's it called, the when you get all the phone numbers, the skip trace, all that. Mm-hmm. What's your thoughts on that? I mean, the way I was looking at it is, you know, if I invest the extra cost per lead, then I can eliminate the leads that don't have properties, for example, if I'm the investor.
Yeah, sure.
What, do you have any thoughts on that in terms of the return on that investment?
I subscribe to probate data from two sources.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't use the data to mail or call. I use the data to create the database, and then I supplement with my own fields that I'm interested in. And that way, when somebody calls me and says they're in probate, I have their case information. I have who their attorney is. I have how many cases their attorney's done in the last 5 years. So I don't use it for lead generation or prospecting. I use it more for the research. But as far as when you say probate plus, is that a product through
all the leads?
Yeah. So yeah. I think like anything else, I would test it and see what you get out of it. You know, if you're going to use it, I find that the people who've had the best results that I've talked to that are not working for a company or promoting their own product are people who use multiple data points, and probate's one of them, right? Like distressed properties and probate. Surely you want to make sure you cross-reference the properties that have probate or don't. It's easily done in California because you put the estimate value of the estate in the filing, and almost always, if it's more than a couple $100,000, it means there's real estate involved. But I can't speak to other states because I don't really know how they work elsewhere. Gotcha. So to answer your question, I don't really know in particular. You know, your question's not really, what do I know? Your question really is it going to work for me in Virginia Beach? And, and the answer is buy it and test it out is what I'd recommend.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I figured, at least a 3 to 6 month campaign and see where it goes from there.
Well, and so you think about that. So if it's like 100 mailers a month, and so month one's 100, month two's 200, month three's 300, month four is 400, or you could do 100 a month, the same ones for 6 months and test it. But that's still $600, maybe let's say a dollar a piece. So just, you know, have a budget, I would say, and give it a shot and then track the results.
Okay.
Thanks.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, Bill, I have something really quick that I'd like to mention.
Sure. Melanie Hands, the probate.
Hi. How's everybody? Hey, doing great. I'm doing great over here. I'm a mess right now, so I don't have my video on. And the reason why I'm a mess is because I just spent the whole day getting an email ready to send out. So I've started my official newsletter and just sent that out. And I just wanted to kind of share with you those numbers. Let me see if I can lower this down. Okay. So I sent out like 400 and I've already had like about 80 people open it. And I just sent that out like 15 minutes ago. And looks like about 62 people have opened it, like two, you know, unsubscribed, but the rest of them opened it. And on that list are people who are, you know, estate planning lawyers, everyone in my field. There's agents on here. There are people that I've been working with that are contractors or just, you know, affiliated with my business. So that is really huge. So I just want to, I'll follow up with you next week and let you know how many people actually physically open that newsletter. But I have made that a mission to get that done. And I finally got it done. So
the goal right now is,
what was that?
I don't think I got it.
Yep, I think I sent it to you. So check your junk mail. I just sent that out about like 2:35, 2:40-ish this afternoon.
Welcome to the Probate Nurse Newsletter. There it is. I did get it after this call started. Oh, yes.
So what now, I did.
Now, this is a classic. If I can just give a little bit of insight on this.
Mm-hmm, please.
So this is a classic case of, to me, either A, working harder than you need to, or B, not leveraging the work you're doing, because I look at this newsletter and I don't know if we may share it, so I'll just summarize it. As is a lot of newsletters I get from most agents, you have like what I would call 4 or 5 pieces. Mm-hmm. Right? You have the welcome to, okay, that's nice. You have the how the probate nurse can assist families, that's nice. You have a podcast episode, really, really nice. Best time to sell if top dollar, nice. Market trends in Tampa, nice. That to me is 5 different emails.
Mm-hmm.
And so you spend a lot of time creating something that, how often do you send this out?
So this is my launch. Don't forget, I'm kind of just showing people what we're going to do, but I plan on doing this at least every other week. And it could just be, if I did it weekly, I could just do the updates, or the following week, I could do something else. So it's not like you have to have a full-blown newsletter, but I just kind of wanted to do it all-inclusive and just show people a little bit about everything that we'll be covering in 2024.
I think that you could, it's great, and I would send that out in its current format at least monthly, but I would also send out, say, weekly the market stats and weekly your podcast episode, and, and to go from one email every month or every other month, every other week, to at least one, probably in your case, 2 or 3 a week.
Okay.
Because here's the thing, people who, and this is for everybody, and this goes back to the question somebody asked about the email program and one of the principles of the program. People don't like you, you're going to unsubscribe. Doesn't matter. People who like you, like I'm one who likes you. And frankly, I'm never, no offense with Tampa at all. I've been there, like Tampa, nice enough. I root for the Bucks, one of my favorite football teams. But I'm never going to move to Tampa, but I'm interested in your newsletter because it's you. And so that's one of the things you have to understand is when you send out content to people who have a personal connection, some will open it just as a way to say, well, what's Melanie doing?
Right.
And so we should all be more comfortable sharing information with people who know, like, and trust us and not worry about more than once a month is too much. It's not. It's not enough. I don't have enough Melanie Hand in my life.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I know that you have to do it at least once a week, and that's why I'm doing the podcast. Plus, I also do my, you know, less than 1 minute posts on TikTok just to keep in front of people. And then I post those everywhere, stories, right. Reels, LinkedIn, right. Everywhere. So it keeps you, you know, front and center. This is just an adjunct to that, and you can utilize it any way you want. And it's really cool. I'm actually looking, you know, in live time at who's opening it, who's unsubscribing it. This is pretty amazing.
Yeah. Good for you. Good job.
Yeah.
Good job, Emily. Thanks for sharing that.
Thank you.
Okay. And I see a question. Is it legal to create a FOIA request for the County Probate Court to release all the records for the past X number of years, along with the name of attorney on the case so we can prioritize who to target? Wow. Ryan, that's a legal question. A FOIA, a Freedom of Information Act request to County Probate Court. I have no idea what that would result in or not. I do know that there are services that have the past data. So I use here in LA, Retran, RETRAN.net. And I was able to go back like 3 years. So when I started, I would go in and they let you download, I think like 200 at a time. So I have my virtual assistant go in and just 200 at a time, put them all in one spreadsheet, sort them all. And I had the database and I keep it going forward. So I don't know that you need a FOIA request. I imagine that would be an expensive proposition. You might find a data provider that has that data for you and can provide it for you. That's I would start with that rather than a FOIA request. Okay, I think we're at the top of the hour, so we're going to finish up here. Again, I'm Bill Gross at Bill Gross Probate on social media. This is a Probate Mastery Real Estate Coaching Call. I think we had some good stuff today. Was this helpful today? We learned some good stuff? Yeah. Good. Well, I appreciate your help, Jim and Twana and Dwayne and who else, whoever else helped along the way. I know Chuck Smith. Thank you for participating. I know the more you participate, the more you get out of it and the more money you make. So thanks for helping out. And I think that's it. We'll do this every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific time, and we'll see you guys soon. Make today your best day ever. Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye. Thanks so much. Bye.